Hello and welcome to another episode of the Traveling Introvert Career Conversations. I am here with Risa Wolf, PhD. Hi, Risa. How are you today?
Hello, Janice. It is a pleasure to be here and finally be able to talk about my secret life of introversion.
Should not be secret. We need more introverts speaking out about their lives. So you mentioned straight away your secret life of introversion. In your mind, what is an introvert?
I will describe myself only because I'm not an expert on this, although I am an expert on some aspects of it. And that is, I was an introvert. I'm just born an introvert. I adore spending time with myself and talking to no humans. It just makes me super happy. When I was a child, though, what makes me kind of interesting and how it really affected my life is that I was raised in a family of extroverts. My father and mother were very social, and they weren't social. They were outgoing. They really actually weren't social, but they were charming. And I have my uncle and my father led everything in the church on the weekend. I mean, I had all these role models, but I didn't do it. And when I was in high school and had to actually give a speech, I said to my dad, "Well, how do you do it? I'm really scared about it." And I said, "How do you do it?" Oh, he sang at people's weddings. I forgot to say that. He was a wonderful singer and he was an optometrist, but everybody asked him to sing at their weddings. And when I said, "How do you get up and sing at weddings?" And he said, "Well, I know I have the best voice in the room." And I thought, "Oh, well, I don't know everything, but I do know today what I'm going to talk about." So that was the first step in getting an introvert to do, you know, outgoing kinds of things that are looked for in our society.
Oh, so let me see if I understand this correctly. For you, it is about not liking human interaction.
I'm sorry to admit it, but I mean, I love humans, and it's every time I meet someone. In preparing for this, I thought, how do I feel about people? When I meet someone new, I'm hoping they're going to be a new friend. It's kind of like the Kermit the Frog thing. Every person is a friend I haven't met yet. And I'm always kind of disappointed if they don't turn out to be at least a colleague or a friend. But I like to meet people, and I am very typically introverted in that I have a very small circle of friends with whom I speak intimately. But I can't stand chit chat and small talk. And I don't have a lot of people that I stay in touch with. I do business wise, but in my personal life, I really keep it small because I'm a typical introvert in that I do a lot of thinking that other people go, huh? And I don't want their feedback on what's going on with me. So I share with people similar to me.
Okay. And so you mentioned like people and the chit chat and the small talk. What is it about that you don't like? Do you find it draining or a waste of time? What is it you don't like about the chit chat and the small talk?
I find it completely boring.
It's
a waste of my time. I could be doing anything except that. I've traveled a lot in my life. And when I meet people, I often have traveled by myself. I wanted to, there's a whole little things, bunch of things I wanted to share with people of how I've survived as an introvert. But when I meet people and they say, "Oh, we met these people and you know, we stay in touch with them." And I go, "These are people that you talked about the meal or the walk you took or the tour you took." I mean, like, you know, low level stuff. I always wondered, what else do you come up to talk about? When I have moved away from people, we have nothing in common. I guess I'm kind of, that's just something for me. But when I am interested in something, I'm deep. I have many, many, many interests, many, 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 many hobbies. And when I go into something, I immerse myself in it. And if I have a new hobby, oh my God, I used to take courses or take the classes or travel there to go to their convention of how to make jewelry or how to you know, make this kind of furniture. I've taken tons of classes because I like to go deep. I'm not a shallow. I'm polite with people, and I know, you know, how to have little conversations with people. But all of those are learned traits that I use to be socially acceptable. And then as soon as I can, I get out of there and go home and get under the covers, and then I'm happy.
So what do you as an introvert find draining?
I really don't like my time wasted by dumb stuff. If I go to a lecture and it's clearly there's nothing there, the person's either not competent. If a person is not a good speaker, I'll still be there if it's good stuff. But if I'm not really inspired or learning something, I tend to just kind of go to the bathroom and not come back.
The escape hatch. I'm just going to the restroom and never to be seen again.
Same thing with networking. I do, you know, because I have to. I do business networking, and I do want to give a hint about how I learn how to do all that stuff. But when I meet people, I'm polite. I know how to be interesting. But as soon as I see someone's like a not particularly interesting or not related to me, I just say, "Oh, it's so nice talking to you. Would you excuse me for a second? I just want to go over there and get another cup of soda," and I leave. I'm very good about that. I really hate having my time wasted.
And so, what do you do to recharge?
So I have to tell you how I started to be a little more extroverted, besides having all these role models, and made me realize what does good speaking look like. So I had a lot of role models to copy. But my turning point was this. I didn't know that I was raised very sheltered. Until my freshman year of college, I was sitting in the cafeteria. I remember the moment because it was one of those special moments in life. I was looking at all of the activities that I could do in college, and I had just gone to college, so I was just leaving my hometown, and there were all of these things that I never knew existed, like going to the theater and going to the ballet and taking a class and doing this and studying Esperanto. There was just this list of things, and I thought to myself, "Oh my God, the world is interesting." And I realized at that moment how limited my life was. And here's the turning point. I said, from now on, whatever comes my way, I'm going to say yes. This was long before that film. And you know what? I have followed that rule the rest of my life. And because of that, I have had really great experiences and tried things that maybe I would do once and then go, good, never again. But there are also things, there are worlds that exist that when someone said this was when I was my first year getting out of college, my first job, this friend that I had, she says, "Hey, do you want to take horseback riding lessons?" Well, that had never zero crossed my mind. I'm a city girl. It just didn't occur to me. I said, "Sure," because I say yes to every opportunity. And we went, and it was so much fun. And this is what I discovered about saying yes to things, is that virtually everything, and this is how I felt this was the first time I experienced it. When we went horseback riding, it's as if I walked up and there was a little door that I opened up. And when I went through it, there was this world that existed that I didn't know about. And then I was hooked. And it reinforced my saying yes to things, because things I don't even know about, there's a whole world. And my rule of life is, if a lot of humans like something, I think I'll give it a chance, because there might be some pleasure in that for me. I'm very big on pleasure.
So you mentioned
I'm revealing things to you I normally don't tell other people.
So you mentioned there about your first job. Can you tell us a little bit what your first job was out of college?
I am so glad you asked me that, because it was such a horrible match for me, and it was the best gift that ever happened to me. When I was in college, I actually was, it turned out that you can be an introvert and still be active in college. As I said, I did everything. And one time I saw that I could run for office, and I thought, well, that'd be kind of fun. Well, punchline is that I, oh, ask me that question again, because I just lost my train of thought
Okay,
imagining
all
remembering
the
college.
things. College. Did you win? And then the question was, what was your first
Oh,
job
yes.
outside of
What was my
college?
first job? So, nobody who's listening can see this, but I have white hair. And what you have heard is true. And that is, people of my age, when we grew up and we were student leaders and we were active women, they said, "Oh, that's really nice. Are you going to be a nurse or a teacher or a secretary?" And I know that I wasn't the only one who thought that, because of the 25 speech therapy majors, 20 of us were the women student leaders at the school. All of us bought the same. We just didn't know. All of us should have gone to law school and business school and been entrepreneurs and stuff. But anyway, the first week on the job, I went, oh my God, I love here. I mean, I was sitting in front of kids doing TH sounds and stuff. So, but here's why it was a gift, because I strongly believe that every cloud has a silver lining. The silver lining was that I was social, I was, young in my 20s and dating and stuff. When I would meet a man or a woman who had an interesting job, I would say, your job is interesting. Can I come visit you at your job and just find out what it's about? I'm not job hunting. It's always important to say that. I'm just curious. I'm looking for the next step in my career. And I visited, I can't even tell you how many people. So I've been exposed to a lot of different things. And each one kind of made me a little more sophisticated because I came from a sheltered life. And then I was in an elementary school, so I really knew nothing about any other field. And so that was really great. And then what happened from there as that evolved is I was so good at doing informational interviewing that people would offer me jobs. And I realized, I really know how to get jobs. And most importantly, I know how to get jobs that match who you are. So, that self-actualization thing. That was the second thing I decided to do in college. When I saw Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that triangle with the bottom line is safety and security, and the very top is using your best strengths to earn your living from, and that's self actually being yourself, self-actualization. And that was in my second year of college. I went, oh, I think I'll do that. And that's why on the first job, when it was like completely like a disconnect, that's when I was searching for, well, I can't choose what I want to do or what my skills are, because I had zero awareness. And so I really came from zero. But what I did was I used all those sick days and personal days, and I visited people. And then my first job after being a speech therapist, which by the way, I did for 10 years because it's a pretty good gig, and I had to spend 10 years finding out what else I should do. I actually became a career counselor because I knew one, how to help people decide what they wanted to. Oh, I shouldn't say this because I don't want to do this anymore. Let me just precede this by saying, don't look up my name and call me for that. What I do now is I'm a TED Talk trainer, and I've taught public speaking for like 25 years because I learned how to do it. I knew what it looked like, and I am a killer teacher. I really know how to take complex stuff and make it simple. And what I did on my own time, just because it was fun, is I studied fear of public speaking for 25 years. So the people who find me are introverts who are really substantial already in their career, or they have a company already and they have to give a big talk. But that's how it all evolved, is that I just kept under the radar. Oh, and this is the part that I kept under the radar. I just always had a lot of fun. And I always did stuff I wanted to do. And I knew I didn't want children. So I didn't have any obligation to get married. And I just didn't have any good role models for marriage. Everybody I saw that was married was a little worse off because of being married. As you can see, my background completely influenced how my life turned out. But the point is that I just, when there was a trip, I remember the first trip I took, it was in my speech therapy years, there was a Easter trip that you could go to Puerto Rico. And I asked all the teachers and all the friends, nobody wanted to go on this trip. But I said, oh, well, I'll sign up. And you know what happens when you go on a trip? You meet people who want to go on the trip. And I went, oh, well, that solves all the problems. And from then on, I traveled and to classes and just did a bunch of fun. But when I would tell people how much fun I was having, I got a lot of envy and annoyance. So I just, when people
Stop
say, what do
talking
you do?
about it.
That's okay. But on the side, I was doing this whole, public speaking thing and coaching stuff. And that's how I evolved, is that I just have stayed under the radar, and I'm very careful who I would say if I have any advice for introverts is to just watch out who you share with. I mean, look at the people who bring you energy, talk to them. Whoever's not on that list, stop talking to them so much.
Yeah. And so you mentioned you did career counseling. Did you do anything between career counseling and being a public speaker coach?
I did a ton. I met some people who were from Honolulu, Hawaii. I was living in San Francisco. And I said, oh, I know, when I was just, this was still speech therapy years because I had the summers off. And I went to Hawaii for the first time. I said to the travel agent, in those days you use travel agents, I said, but isn't that like a honeymooner place? He said, oh no, that's fun. When I went, I was stunned. You lived in Mexico, so you know, living in paradise. A1, I looked down at the outdoor plants and I said, those are my indoor plants. This is better.
Yeah, right.
And after visiting the third time, I decided why I'd met people who I like. Why don't I live here? And so I lived there. And while I was there, I volunteered to be the press secretary in the lieutenant governor's race against the governor. And when they met me, or I don't know what they saw about me, but they said, oh, why don't you be our press secretary as a volunteer? I had no idea what that was, but my rule was to say, sure, yes. And I hated every part of it. Although I must
Oh.
say, it does look very, very good on my resume. So I did things like that. I took probably 20 other jobs because I didn't know who I was at that point. I took mostly secretary jobs and often got fired because those are like my least good skills. Is I think. And I'm like a beginner. I'm not a middle person or an ender in projects. I just didn't have the skills. But each time I left a job, I would say to myself, okay, what are the three things? This is another introvert suggestion for finding work that matches you. Is after at the end of each job, I would say, what parts of this job do I like the most? So I think of my three favorite things about the job, you know, large company, small company, talk to people, not talk to people, create, don't, whatever the skills were. And then this was part of my career counseling. Again, I'm sorry I brought this up because I don't even tell people. I don't want to read another resume again in my life. But what I did was I would say to people, I'm looking at the next step in my career and I'm looking for somebody that has these three things, and it would be my three favorites. And then I'd be quiet. What kind of work does that? Since I didn't know of many kinds of work. And that's how I got it, looked, did informational interviewing and went to the next job. And when I left that, I looked, what are my three favorite parts of that? And that's pretty much, and then it led to my being a trainer at a seminar company. Now, 3 day trainings, 3 full days, and I would fly there and fly home, always. I would go the super early the day before because every city has a cool museum or at least a restaurant that you want to go. There's just something unique about places.
Yes.
But when I would come home, I would always feel guilty the next day that I just didn't work and I had things to do. And after about 2 years, I went, you know, I think I have to give the la the sec the day back. I have to give myself the day off. And
Yes.
that's when I was really honoring both sides of my personality. I can turn on, and it's fun for, I love to teach. Seeing the light go off on in someone's eyes is really thrilling, but I always have to recover.
Yeah, that's really interesting that it took you that long to be like, wait a minute, so maybe I should not feel guilty and I need this and that's okay. Guilt
No
plays a
idea.
huge part in like some of the things, the decisions we make in life, for
Yes.
better or for worse.
No question. Good point.
So in your current work that you do, is there something that you do consistently that you would give as advice for someone to do consistently in their business or their career?
No, there are absolutely certain things that I do that I know work. When I was invited to Dell, the corporate, to do some training. They have a wonderful diversity program for kids who are on the spectrum. These really, really smart kids, but they're very, very much on the spectrum. And I took a sticky note and I tore off the sticky corner and I pasted it just like above, between, not between the eyes, but slightly above it. You know, like above where my eyeglasses would be. And I said to them, when you're talking to that person, look at that yellow sticky note, because people that in that population were never making eye contact. And when I said, I taught them a ton of other things, but at the end, I said to their boss, so what did you think? She says, you got to make eye contact. And I noticed that so that's in person. So everyone, just pretend there's a sticky or a smudge of spinach on someone's between their eyes, and look at them when you speak. And on virtual, You have to look at the camera and not at the faces. That's
Yeah, you're like,
huge.
yes.
Okay, but the
Then
sec.
looking at the camera, you're like, oh, but there's that light thing, and then you go into the.
Right. But, and you know, if you have to, because if you can't stand not looking at yourself, get a sticky and put it over your own face. But this, I want to give a second piece of advice, may I?
Go ahead.
When you walk in a room, look at people and say with us and force a smile on your face and say hi. Because here's the, and it's not for you. It's for them to go, oh, this person's okay, because our most primitive part of our brain is still looking at every person in our vicinity to see are they safe or not. It's not conscious, it's unconscious. And when you walk in and smile, it's just saying, hi, I'm happy to be here with you. And that's it.
So, with all of that in mind and all the work that you've done, can you tell me one misconception that people have about the work that you do?
Oh, people think that fear of public speaking is permanent and in your DNA. It's completely not. It's a learned behavior. Usually someone was really horrible to you. It's like, so I met this woman who just at some event I was at. When I told her what I do, that I train these TED Talk speakers and I cure public speaking fear, she says, oh, I do the same thing. I'm a fourth grade teacher and I have the kids get up and give a speech. And if they're not any good, I say, oh, that was terrible. Sit down. I was just as you are, completely speechless because I thought, one, this woman should never be around children. And two, she's the reason why people come to me at 35 years old with fear of public speaking, because not only did that kid say to himself or herself, I will never get up in front of people again and be humiliated like this. Not only that kid, but every kid watching said to themselves, I am never going to get up there and be humiliated like that. Do people remember it? No. Do they fear public speaking for that moment on? Yes. And as you can see, that was learned and it can be unlearned. And I studied with Dr. Albert Ellis, the man who invented cognitive therapy. He's like second to Freud. And I was with him in his 90s. His body was wrecked, but his brain was completely sharper than ever. And that's why I work really fast, because I would say that if someone has fear of public speaking, do some research, get a good book. I know of a very good one that Janice will tell you about when I'm finished. But the point is, fix it, because the mistake is to think that fear of public speaking and being so self-aware and self-conscious, it's fixable. It is not part of your makeup.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. And now I have one last surprise question for you. And it's the one that I ask everybody. And in your opinion, is a hot dog a sandwich?
Oh, a hot dog's definitely a sandwich.
Why?
Because you eat it in a bun and it's some kind of protein and you hold it and you eat it while you're shopping at Costco.
Yes, Costco wins on that one. The $1 for those of you who are not in the United States, Costco is a very big bulk buying organization. You go in, you bulk buy, but the one thing that they have that has been at the same price for decades is their hot dog, and it is $1.50, and they will fight tooth and nail to make sure it stays that way.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Risa, thank you so very much for sharing your time and your talent with us. Can you please let the audience know where they can find out more about you and the wonderful work that you do?
Well, my website is everybody wants to be confident. So I called my website Confident Speaking. And the book that I wrote to stop introverts' public speaking fear is a 100-page book, because I taught it so long, I really have it where if you just follow it, you'll get fixed. And that is called Mr. Bear, like the animal bear. Mr. Bear Speaks Without Fear. It's superb. It already is selling internationally. That was my goal. When I saw that bad people around the world talk like marketing and PR people, and good people don't speak up, and three quarters of the people in the world have public speaking fear. I thought, well, I fixed public speaking fear. I think I'm going to write a book that I know works. And that's what I did. So those are my two contacts.
Excellent. Thank you so very much. Thank you, everyone. This is Janice at The Career Introvert, helping you build your brand and get hired. Have a great rest of your week.